Hello, and welcome to the Weekly Comic Spotlight on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayer. In this episode, we'll be discussing recently released comics. One from DC, one from Marvel, and at least one other. As always, we'll keep major spoilers to a minimum, but we'll discuss general plot points and storylines of the comics we review. This is Weekly Comics Spotlight number 553 for comics originally released on March 14th, 2018. Now, starting us off in DC is Detective Comics number 976. This is part one of Batman Eternal. That's Batman plural. And of course, Batman Eternal was one of the weekly titles they did a few years ago. Did you read that?
I did not, actually. I know, I remember when it came out, and I wasn't reading DC at the time, because that was during the Rebirth era, or not the Rebirth, the New 52 era. But I'm actually looking to pick it up and trade, along with I never read Scott Snyder's entire Batman run. So I'm new to all of it.
You got a lot of good stuff waiting for you then.
Definitely.
This is one of those where I thought it was a little bit of kind of a transition issue. This has been a team book for a while. Not sure if it's going to continue being a team book in the future or not, but the team is a little fragmented right now, and there were a couple of things in here that I thought were just a little odd or caught my eye or whatnot. The first was when we open with a scene with Orphan.
Yes.
Is it just me, or is her costume's a little weird with the almost cargo pants or whatever?
It was completely weird, because I was looking at it, I was like, that doesn't seem like anyone I've seen. I was looking at it and going, well, who in the heck is this? The entire time I was reading it. But yeah, it's off.
Okay, so it wasn't just my imagination. I'm like, has it always been that way and I just didn't notice?
No, and sometimes I mix up the characters in here because I'm not as well read in DC, but I've been reading this one, Detective Comics, from whenever they relaunched it with Rebirth, whatever issue that was. And yeah, it did seem a little bit off to me too.
Okay. What got me is this whole thing is kind of a story about a falling out between Batman and Robin. And stories like that are nothing new. Matter of fact, that's one of almost the go-to kind of story arcs to do with Batman and Robin is they get in a fight, one of them storms off, and they don't talk to each other for a while. What I found unusual and kind of different with this is Batman was the one who was kind of looking out for the emotional well-being of other members of the Batman family.
And that was interesting to me as well.
Yeah, he's usually not the one to do that. But it's kind of funny because the whole thing was Tim, Red Robin, who's recently come back, wants to kind of restart the, what do they call it, the Knights program or whatever, of kind of Team Batman, if you will.
Correct.
And had been working on it in secret in the cave, and Batman's like, you should be resting, you shouldn't be doing this. And Batman doesn't want to start the program back up, and he's like, I'll just do it myself, I'll go it alone. And that's kind of totally in character for him, and it's one of those that it's one... parts of it felt really in character. Parts of it felt like this is a change in the dynamic or whatever.
And yeah, I noticed they were screaming a lot, and it was kind of interesting.
They were screaming, but no punches were thrown.
Correct. No punches.
Which, if you go to... I'm trying to think if it was when Tim was first introduced, kind of the falling out between Dick Grayson and Bruce Wayne at that point, some of that did get, I think, a little physical.
Interesting.
What I found unsurprising here, because, I mean, we've already established that Red Robin had been spending many nights over many weeks in the Batcave doing stuff, and Batman's like, oh, I just found out about this. When Batman says, you know, you're not leaving, and shuts the passageway out, and Robin's like, you know, I've been down here, and I'm like a computer whiz, and he overrides it and drives out.
And exactly, and Batman kind of shuts him down on that. Yeah. So he overrode his protocol, I believe, and it was completely interesting the entire falling out with them, and it ended on a weird twist, and I think it would have meant something more if I knew the person they were talking about, but after I researched it, then it kind of made a little bit more sense to me.
The one at the end?
Correct.
That's a character that Tim has, I think, a pretty long history with pre-Flashpoint.
Okay.
And it was I wouldn't say it's one of his kind of foes, supporting character types, but it's one that, again, he's done a lot with. But that's one where DC's in kind of the interesting position of drawing a lot on a continuity they kind of threw away with Rebirth.
Interesting. That I didn't know.
So now, they're going in different directions. It's just weird.
I was kind of like interested in the, you know, I'm picking up on what I can in the story, not knowing a lot of, you know, some of the characters. I'm not reading the books like Red Hood and the Outlaws, so I don't know all the characters in here, but it's been a good read and I've enjoyed James Tynion writing it. To my understanding, this is his last arc. He'll be done it. I think it's issue 981. He'll be off the book. But I found it interesting, you know, they show Cassandra at the very beginning mm-hmm. as a young girl, and she's having to meet with a therapist and talk her issues out and everything. And I like the twist in there where, you know, he's there for the Robins. He's there for these young men who have things that happen in their life because he's able to relate to them. And he's not able to relate to her and help her out with the issues that she's going through, the traumas that she has in her life. So I just found that like a little bit of a humanizing thing with Batman, which is kind of nice because he comes off sometimes as so cold and so unemotional. So that was a nice little twist in there that they kind of threw that in there for me, a new reader.
Well, Dr. Leslie Tompkins, who's the therapist here, is kind of sort of one of Batman's, you know, proxy consciences, and Alfred being another one, of course. So her looking out for the other members of the Batman family, I mean, that is part and parcel of what she does.
Okay, and I didn't know that.
She's actually drawn, or at least maybe it's just the hair coloring, a bit younger than we've seen before. Because when we see her talking to Bruce, they almost seem like they're roughly the same age. And Leslie Tompkins was one of the mother figures for Bruce when he was growing up, after his parents died.
That's definitely not a mother figure from the artist, their rendering of her.
Yeah.
Because, like you said, they look like they're exactly the same age.
Now, if and when you read Batman Eternal, I think you'll get a little more insight into Orphan here, Cassandra. Prior to this continuity, she had been known as Black Bat, and prior to that, as one of the Batgirls.
Okay, all right. That'll give me some context, and actually, I'm interested to go back and listen to some of your older podcasts, because I used to skip through the DC section, not reading it. I would just go right through to the Marvel and the independent stuff.
I can understand that. It hurts me deeply, because I'm a DC fan, what can I say? But I get it.
Yeah, hey, I'm on board now, so I'm with you.
There was a little bit at the tail end of this where they had an icon, and I'm like, oh, are they going to go where that icon kind of sort of implies, if you know what the icon means? And we'll find out if they go that way or not, but if so, they're going to bring, again, some stuff that has been used in the past, and I'm trying to remember how much of that was in this continuity versus pre-Flashpoint. I know pre-Flashpoint it was a bigger thing, and certainly pre-Crisis it was a very different thing. Now, but we'll see where they go.
Did you read issue 975 yet? I know you're a little bit behind. The issue right before this?
Believe so. Certainly that was my intent.
Okay. I like this storyline. 975 was like a big boom bang issue. This one is a little bit quieter, but it's still a good read. But it was interesting. To me, it just seems the entire team aspect is going away for the new writer. It's going to be more Batman centric because you had Batwoman kind of spinning off in the last issue with the death and everything that happened there. And then you have
actually,
the falling out of Robin.
I have not read that. I didn't do my due diligence. I should have read that before reading this.
Well, I will not spoil it for you, but it was actually a really, really good read. And then this one, you have Robin, the falling out with Robin. So I see the team is definitely going away and what's going to happen with this. Because they even kind of talk about this in the aftermath of what happened in 975. You have Batwoman. She's going up. Or basically, she's joining the colony, which, in my understanding, the colony is similar to Marvel's S.H.I.E.L.D. Am I correct in that?
Kind of, sort of. It's not as big. It's not as well known. But that's kind of what they're trying to do it as.
Yeah, and she's trying to take these Bat figures more global. Instead of just focusing on Gotham, there's so much we can do in the world. And we can utilize this colony and go out there and fight, I guess, the Court of Owls and whoever else, you know, the big bads all over the world.
I kind of took this issue as potentially setting up a colony series after
this. That would be interesting. You could almost see that instead, maybe getting rid of the Batwoman and turning it into Batwoman in the colony or the colony number one.
Something like that. I mean, have that Colony series, if they do one, replace kind of Batwoman and or this.
Interesting. That could happen. That would. I didn't think about that, but that would make perfect sense with what they're doing. But he's definitely kind of tearing down his team as he's getting ready to leave the book, James Tynion.
Yeah. It kind of annoys me a little when writers feel they've got to put the toys back in the toy box almost exactly how they found them, because you wind up with an unspinning of tales there at the end.
Exactly. And I was kind of enjoying the team aspect. I mean, I never read Detective for more than the team aspect because I hadn't read it in the past, but I enjoyed this book. So I'm going to be sad to see it change, you know, go back, because it basically will be another Batman book. And I don't know, what is that going to be? Bendis come out at issue 1000. Who knows? Maybe give Bendis a Batman title.
If that's where they go, and they may keep a team, it just may be a slightly different team.
That's true. So it'll be interesting to see what they do. And I think they announced the new writer, but I can't remember off the top of my head who it was. But there's a new person coming for sure.
Well, that's bit with the Colony is kind of what I was thinking. This is sort of a transition arc for the team. They're yes. taking it from where it is to where it will be. As to whether it's in this book or not is a question. But I'm going to be a little disappointed if they don't play with the Colony a little bit more and maybe try to build it up as a bit of a S.H.I.E.L.D. type organization more so than it is.
Especially if they get some of the talent that they have, because they have a kind of like a spread when they go in there and they're fighting with this Court of Owls. So it's Batwoman. It looks like Red Hood and the Outlaws. Well, not the Outlaws, but Red Hood.
No, it was.
I see a guy with a red mask. Oh, I don't know who these characters are. I'm trying to guess.
The guy with the red mask is not Red Hood, although I can see the confusion. That is Azrael.
Azrael. Okay, I'm trying to figure out just from pictures because they never say who they are in here. I'm like, oh, who's this guy?
Yeah, because that would be accessible writing.
I miss the old comics when they tell you who in the heck people were, especially if you don't know. Because I always look at this, I'm like, okay, there's the glowing in the dark on the guy that has the bat signal on his chest. There's the Red Hood guy. There's another little Red Hood back there. Who are these people?
Okay, so obviously we got Batwoman. The one there on that splash page on the right is Azrael. Okay. He was the one who replaced Batman back in the day around Detective, I want to say, was it 600? One of the hundreds.
Okay.
And he had his own sort of the Azrael series for a while. He's had a couple of other titles. He's come and gone. This is the Rebirth New 52 version of him. The glow-in-the-dark Batman, as you referred to him as, which is not a bad name.
it's almost like Black Panther with a glowing symbol.
Yeah, it's not too far off. It's actually Batwing.
Batwing, okay.
Which is Lucius Fox's son, whose first name is escaping me at the moment. It's going to come to me later.
We're testing you.
Anyway, he was the one that Batwing had his own series for a while in one of the later waves of the New 52 books. Character didn't go too well, so they swapped him out for Lucius's son. And the title kind of died anyways, but they've kept him around and such. And then the other guys in the back, I take as just basically the Colony equivalent of S.H.I.E.L.D. agents.
That's what I was kind of guessing, just some random guys in there that are wearing basically uniforms.
Yeah, bandoliers instead of utility belt kind of deals.
Exactly.
And even see them fight?
You see them kind of fight the Court of Owls, but it's kind of broken up between pages. I think you saw them fight. At least I wrote down there was a fight.
There was a fight, but we saw Azrael and Batwing do it. I don't think that we ever see...
Oh, she just walks in. She's not in the fight. Is she? No, she's not. In. Oh, no, there's
the panel
a fight.
They
okay.
walk in. On the next page, we see the three leads fighting.
That's
none
correct.
Of the support guys. And then the next time we see him a couple of pages later, they're doing the walk into the cave, the airship or whatever scene.
Correct. So, yeah, there was a fight, and it was really quick. It was one page, done.
Yeah.
One panel and done.
For me, the art on this issue was okay, maybe slightly subpar. I mean, it wasn't ineffective. It told the story, but it certainly wasn't something I'm like, wow, that was some great art or something. It's like, wow, that was okay art.
I'm in the same boat. If I read the issue 975 before I had read this one, and the art in there was really amazing, top notch, because it's a big number, 975.
Mm-hmm.
But the art was amazing. The writing was really good. So this one was kind of a downgrade from that issue. But yeah, the art in here is good, but it wasn't great. And it was really heavy on the shadows. It was kind of dark. And I think that was just to maybe have some emotion that things are going bad with everyone on the team. But it wasn't something that I was really wowed by.
Yeah, that's kind of where I was too. And by the way, Luke is Lucius's son's name.
So okay.
Luke Fox is Batwing.
See, usually if they give me the characters' names on the page, and because I'm not familiar, I'll go in there and I'll do some research and figure out who the heck they are. But if they don't tell me, I just kind of skip over it and just keep reading.
Yeah, but you shouldn't have to do research when reading a story. I mean, to me, that's a sign of not so great writing.
Yeah, and that's why I liked the Green Lantern so much when Humphreys was on it. He was great. He kind of held my hand the entire way.
So I thought this was a good story. It had some pluses, some minuses, but overall I enjoyed it. I like a lot of these characters. I like the Team Batman approach they're taking here. I hope it continues in some format after this arc, but it's not so certain. And certainly I think they're building up to some stuff with the reveal there at the end. And I'm curious about that. So I went with a B on this.
Okay. I'm actually pretty close to you because it was a decent story. It wasn't bad at all. It was just a down from the big finale on the last arc. And the art was okay. So for me, just the art had drug it down a tiny bit, so I give it a B minus.
Yeah, that makes sense. Certainly I think they've had better art on the title in the past.
Definitely.
Shall we move over to our Marvel book?
Yes. This one made me a little bit sad this week.
This is The New Mutants, Dead Souls, number one. I don't know if this is a mini-series or an ongoing series. I kind of don't think it's going to matter. I think it'll last about as long either way.
Yeah, I think it'll last 6, and I'd be surprised if it makes it to 12.
I was actually going to go maybe 5, but okay. First off, I mean, these characters are pretty much not classic New Mutants. Wolfsbane is, but the others, Magic, Richter, Boom Doom, and Strong Guy, are not.
Correct. It's completely random characters. It almost reminded me of the thing that Marvel did with the Champions. So the Champions, you go back to the original series, and you have Ghost Rider, and you have Hercules and everything. Now you have, it's basically a kids team, Avengers-types kids. So I don't know if this is just to keep the name, you know, New Mutants, to keep the trademark, but these are not the original New Mutants at all. They're basically just different X characters.
Well, and again, Wolfsbane was one of the original New Mutants. So
correct.
That's the exception that proves the rule. And what's also funny is not only are none of these the original New Mutants, they're not even new mutants.
No, they've been around for quite a while.
If they had taken one of these characters and said, oh, let's spin up a new team around them, okay, maybe. Now, we do get another one of the original New Mutants in this later with Karma. But she's kind of the behind-the-scenes, I guess, leader of this group?
Yeah, the leader who showed up at the very end when all the action was over.
Yeah, I mean, when I first opened this up, I mean, just on the first story page, I'm like, oh, wow, this art's kind of underwhelming.
Yeah, this art was really rough. I was just looking and I was just like, this is something that I would expect to see maybe at an Oni press or something like that. It's just not Marvel art to what we're used to seeing.
Now, I do want to clarify, because I agree with that entirely, that the sequential storytelling is fine. It's the actual look of the art that
Correct.
Looks more like you would feel in something in the back half or a smaller publisher than you would typically feel see in a Marvel or DC book.
Correct. Yeah, it's done correctly. It's just, I don't know if it was rushed or if the person's just not very talented. I hate saying that, but I was just surprised at the art. It's just not that good. It's subpar.
Well, if you go to the panel where Magic is doing the bit with the cat.
Okay, yeah.
Richter actually looks pretty good. Magic not so much, and Strong Guy almost comedic.
Yeah, it's true. She looks like she's, I don't know, on drugs or drunk, and he looks normal. And yeah, it's just completely off. Everything's off.
So there's some inconsistency there.
Yes.
And frankly, it was not a great start to a story because it was unclear why these mutants are at this place and even what they think their mission is because they're unclear on it.
Exactly. They did. It was almost like, okay, I'm assuming, okay, now I think it's Matt Rosenberg. Yeah, he's the writer on this. He, I know, is a good writer from stuff that I've read in the past. So I don't know if he just didn't care or if he was literally handed hey, we need to use these five characters. Here you go. And you're dropping them into this situation. I don't know where this story came from because it's just completely out of the blue. Here they are in this town. No getting the band together. No why they're together. No how they met each other. It's just like, hey, we're not X-Men anymore. So here we are. And they literally, I think, say that in one of the panels.
Well, we do get a little bit of an explanation late in the game. Because after we're, through, I don't know, 4/5 of the story, we find out that I guess there was a grave robber who took something from a dead witch who apparently didn't like it, somehow contacted magic, and she went to go get it back with these other people. But, I mean, I'm guessing a lot as to what's going on there. And when we finally get back to the Hitachi Corporation headquarters, and I don't remember when or where the Hitachi Corporation came from, and I'm sure I've read the story. This is when we find out Karma is the financier of the team and the CEO of this company, and she sent them out. And one of them is like, you know, if you wanted professionals, you should have picked a different team. And she's like, yeah, I did. Cannibal, Sunspot, Magna, Skids, others that were pretty much New Mutants. Some of them a little later, some of them original. And she's like, they couldn't come. I got you.
Exactly. Like, you guys are just the leftovers. What a great team building thing to say.
Well, but it's also, to me, a little on the nose in terms of they wanted to do another X book, and these are some of the characters that were available.
Exactly. Yeah, they're just, these are people that aren't being used. Here you go. It was just very odd. The entire story, I was going through this. I'm like, what's going on? What's going on? By the way, here's zombies. And it's not just zombies. Here's what do they call them in The Walking Dead? A herd of zombies. I'm just like, why are there's a herd of zombies? And it was just, it didn't make any sense. Now there's a witch here. And later on they explain it, but it's so far in the back of the book that you're almost tuned out by that point because it doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, it was too little too late for me.
Yes. And even the explanation seemed like it was just kind of put in there kind of almost haphazard. It's just, here it is.
Well, the other thing that got me is, particularly as they're teasing the next story with, oh, you're not a mutant, you can go into the place that eats mutants alive, so you'll be safe. It's like, this is an X-Men horror title.
Yes, and a really bad one at that.
I'm not into horror titles to begin with, so this is one of those where, am I going to get the next issue? Well, yeah, I pre-ordered. Am I going to get the one after it? Yeah, I pre-ordered. Am I going to keep getting it? Well, yeah, I'm kind of all in on Marvel, and I like some of the characters. I want to see what they do. And sometimes there is a perverse sense of fun to be had on looking at something that is just, what were they thinking? Can they pull this off? And yeah, they're not. But how come they're not?
You know, yeah,
so there's an educational aspect to writing sometimes. Not to say we'll get that with this, but you know, that's what I'm holding out for.
Yeah, this is going to be the X-Men horror book slash this team is kind of like their Ghostbusters to fight the paranormal. And it's really, after reading this first issue, I would dump it, except I pre-ordered them. And it's cheaper because it comes with the bundle. So it's kind of like a freebie that's thrown in for me. But I hope it doesn't last much beyond 6 issues if this is what we're expecting in the future. It's just not very good.
I would be amazed if it did. This told a story, not a good one, and not one that kept me engaged. But it's at least not inept storytelling. It's just lackluster and kind of unimpressive storytelling, and I do want to differentiate the two. I've read a couple of comics. It's like, this just doesn't work.
Yes.
This worked. It just bored me.
Yeah, it bored me, and I had this feeling of just disappointment. Not disappointment in the comic, but disappointment that Matt Rosenberg, who's a good writer, got stuck doing this, or he's not giving effort. I don't know what happened, or if they just said, hey, we got to meet our quota, and we need to have an extra issue for the next 4 months until this fresh start comes along. I don't know what it was, but it was just disappointment all around.
I'm going to say, though, that to a certain extent, this is the almost definition of an X title, because before too long, it will be an X title.
That's true. I like that. I like that usage.
If you like these characters, there are better stories to be had. For some of them, I would point to Peter David's X-Men. For others, I would say the original run of the New Mutants. If you love this and you think there's something I'm missing on it, by all means, chime in on the forum, the Slack channel, let me know. I'm going to keep going with it, but it is certainly not something I would recommend unless you've really wondered what a B or C grade horror movie with the X-Men might look like.
Yeah, and this is going to stay in my order just because I get the whole bundle from Marvel, and that's about it. I mean, for me, otherwise I wouldn't be reading it, but it may end up like Unbeatable Squirrel Girl. I get that in my bundle, and that's one I really don't like, and I kind of thumb through, look at the art, I'm like, yeah, it's still bad art, and I kind of tuck it away and I don't even read it. So I think that's what this is. It's going to happen with this one.
I was debating between a C- and a D+, but really, the art was all over the place. The story was lackluster at best. On a technical level, it told the story decently. It was not a good story. It's not something I could recommend. So I'm going to go with the D+.
I'm actually right there with you, a little bit lower. I give it a D. It's just something that I wouldn't recommend unless you are really, really wanting to read everything X.
I can see that. For me, it's got the saving grace of, it, at least, like I said, wasn't completely inept storytelling.
Yes.
And I try to reserve the lower grades personally for those, but this is, again, one that there's better things to get, and certainly at the $3.99 cover price, it is not worth people's money. And
I
hate to say that.
Yeah, this was kind of disappointing because I thought it would be better.
Yeah, it should have been. It wouldn't be hard to be.
Yeah, wouldn't be hard at all.
Shall we move on to our other book?
Yes, we can.
This is Secret Weapons number 0, Owen's Story, or Secret Weapons Owen's Story number 0, one of the two, take your pick. I don't know, I don't care. I guess it's Secret Weapons colon Owen's Story number 0, according to the inside front cover.
Okay.
Always nice to get that stuff right. It's sometimes hard when they get a little fancy with the trade dress. This is a one-shot connected to the Secret Weapons mini-series they did a little while ago. And this was kind of interesting because this character of Owen, he like creates or summons things seemingly at random, and it's unclear, like, did he actually create them or are they like teleporting from somebody else? Did he steal them? I mean, what's going on here?
Exactly. It's not explained, but yeah, it's very interesting power.
Yeah, it's to me, it is a Grant Morrison-esque power.
Yes.
Because when I was growing up, it's like, oh, if I do comics, here's how I'll do them. And I've always considered superpowers to have kind of a grace field that you could use them in polite company. This is why when the Invisible Woman turns invisible, she and her costume all turn invisible. None of this, she's got to strip down sort of a thing. I mean, that's just, you wouldn't do that in polite company.
Exactly.
You know, that's why the Human Torch's stuff tends to be flameproof. Otherwise, you know, it'd be a little embarrassing.
Exactly.
There's humor to be had. But to me, it's you know, lowbrow humor. But then there's kind of the Grant Morrison school of superpowers where it's just you can do something and it's kind of wonky or weird, or who would ever want that?
Exactly. You know? He comes up with odd things.
Yeah, and this kind of fits in that.
Yeah, he seemingly has no control over this power. So he may say, hey, I want to create an example in here, create a bowling pin. And out pops a guitar, you know? Create a bowling pin. Out pops a leather jacket. Just random, completely random things.
What I loved, though, about that is we start with his garage sale of these completely random things.
Yes.
And then we get a series of vignettes of how he got some of these, what's going on, how he wound up in this position. And it gives us, it's a series almost of small vignettes, and this is a done-in-one story.
Yes.
But it also references events from the mini-series.
Some of the characters from the Secret Weapons were in here, yes. So, and one of the characters who actually is no longer with us.
Well, and one or two of the events we're seeing from a different vantage point than we had seen before.
Yes, that was interesting too. So it was interesting, and this book almost warrants two reads because you read through it once, and at first you're a little bit confused. What's going on? Why are these things popping up here randomly? And it all comes together at the end. And when you read it through a second time, it makes a lot more sense.
Yeah, I thought this worked as a standalone story in sort of an Astro City, maybe a Astro City Light kind of a way.
Yes.
But it also acted as a great companion to the Secret Weapons miniseries.
And this was almost a palate cleanser because I read this issue right after I read that New Mutants issue. And this one was so lighthearted, and it did have some comedy in there that I took it as a palate cleanser. It made me smile a couple times in there, which I really enjoyed.
Yeah, I mean, there was an aspect of this where I felt it was a little light in terms of lighthearted, light-natured, you know, uplifting, whatever. Not like a wow, it's really uplifting, but again, a nice kind of happy read, if you will.
Yeah.
And it wasn't like it was deep with story, but it was satisfying story.
Yeah. Actually, the vibe, not as comedical as Hawkeye, but this kind of reminded me almost of like a Matt Fraction type run on Hawkeye.
Yeah.
Where one of the stories that you pull out of there where it was lighthearted and it was just different. The way the writing was done was smart. Was just different and smart the way that it was written.
Well, and there's an aspect of almost a day in the life of, but it was a good day to watch.
Exactly.
I mean, I've read a couple of things where it was a day in the life of, and they just kind of meandered through life.
And this one, it all comes together at the end, and I just found this really enjoyable. I mean, everything, like from the attack that we saw in there that happened, you know, it's a different viewpoint, to just how all the things that were created, how it impacts the lives that he touched throughout the day.
Yeah.
So well, I really enjoyed this.
The art on this, I mean, there on some pages are like 12 and whatnot panels, others a little less. None of them felt like, geez, this is crowded. But they used the space of the page well, and a lot happens here.
It does. The art in here was very, I liked it. It was amazing because I go through here, and he has very detailed lines when he's doing character work. The faces, very realistic. The
yeah.
Expressions are good. And like you said, it doesn't seem crowded. It's just gorgeous art. I loved it.
Yeah, this to me is a much more polished artist, both in terms of the line work, the sense of design, and the page layouts, even the little things of the tag of what the item is, followed by the how much it'll go for at the garage sale.
Definitely. That was a nice touch. I like that. The tags are almost like new chapter.
Yeah, and it comes down to, he's got the ability to create things people either did, do, or will need. So he's actually got a fairly useful power. He just doesn't really have his timing down.
Exactly. And it's almost like as he's bumping into people or he's seeing people throughout life, you could almost take it one of two ways, where his mind is filling in things that maybe he doesn't see right now, but he's kind of seen in his life. And at times his mind's thinking ahead. Maybe it's almost thinking into the future and he doesn't know it.
There's an aspect of his power could have that precognitive ability or whatnot, that if he can explore that, if he can really figure that out, he could be very powerful.
He could be a powerful Psyot. And by the way, anyone who's not reading Valiant, a Psyot is kind of like a mutant, except they all don't make it through the turning on process.
It's actually, I would say, almost maybe a little bit more like the Inhumans, because like the Terrigen Mist, there's a process to activate.
Correct. Yeah, more like the Inhumans would be. Yeah, that's more correct.
But same basic idea. Yeah, this I thought was like I said, great art, really good story, nice done in one aspect, good character based issue, and I didn't count how many pages there were, but it felt a lot more fulfilling than I think your typical comic does. And having a page or two at the end where it was, I guess, the writer on kind of how he put the story together or whatnot in a interview sort of a format or whatever, I thought was a nice added bonus.
Yeah, and I like that too, because he literally came up with this story based on helping a friend out with a garage sale. And the garage sale nature of just, he had a story to everything that was being sold at this garage sale, and he just created a comic book based on that, and a really good read of a comic. So I would look out for this writer. His name is Eric Heiser, because Fred, there's been so many writers out of Valiant that are doing great things for DC now, and I think one of them did some stuff for Marvel. So I expect good things from this guy in the future, because his writing is top notch, and also this artist who I can't find the name of right now.
But Raoul Allen, I believe.
Yeah, top notch art, and really good writer.
Yeah, Valiant puts together some really good stuff, and I liked how, if you're willing to go in and kind of hit the ground running with the story, in other words, pick up the things as you go along, in terms of who he is, what his status quo is, and you get all of that here. It's a very enjoyable read. I think it's fairly accessible. You get more if you either read Secret Weapons before or after this, but I think you could do it in either order. And this is just a really well-done comic.
I agree wholeheartedly. Great comic.
So for me, I'm going to go with an A- on this. It is one that I think is worth finding and checking out. I don't know if they've collected Secret Weapons yet or not. I would hope that this gets into that collection if it's not already out.
It definitely should, and I'm interested to see if they put it at the front or at the end, because it could, like you said, it could go either place. And it warrants a second read, so maybe they should put it at the front and the end.
But be funny. I don't know if that'd work well, but...
Exactly.
It came out after, but it's a zero issue, so yeah, either way would work.
No, I liked it very much. I gave this one a B+, and I would recommend anybody who is not reading Valiant to look at some of Valiant stuff, because the writing is top-notch and the art is off the charts in a lot of their books. This is more of a, you know, it's a realistic, you know, simple art, but you go to Exo Manowar and their art tops anything that DC or Marvel does. It's just amazing.
Well, and sometimes they have a painted style, sometimes they have some other styles, but they do not skimp on the production values and just everything from the printing quality to how they traffic their books to the creators they pick. They may not be the top names or whatever, but they've got really talented people that are going to become top names probably at some point.
Exactly, because I know DC, what was it, Van Lente they pulled off from...
Yeah, Van Lente is one of the ones...
He was writing a Valiant originally, and he's been having... Oh, Venditti. Venditti is another one. He's writing Hal Jordan, isn't he?
I believe so.
And he was writing at Valiant before that. And I was just, when I was reading him at Valiant, I was like, this guy's amazing. And so I'm enjoying his Hal Jordan run. He's a great writer.
Yeah. So they've got a really good lineup of creators over at Valiant.
Definitely. So, John, you had some stuff that came up in your neck of the woods recently.
Yes. Yes, I did. It was an interesting couple of days for me. I live in Austin, Texas. We're recording this on March 20th. Go up almost a week later and stuff. But we had back at the beginning of March on the 2nd, there was a package explosion. Then on the 12th, there were two others. People have been injured. Two maybe more have died. On Sunday, there was a fourth bomb. This time, instead of being on like the east side of town or some other part of town, it was actually just a street or so over in my neighborhood. My house was far enough away, I wasn't impacted by the explosion, didn't even notice it, but certainly close enough that my sister, when she was watching, I don't know if it was Madam Secretary or whatever she was watching, and it got preempted with the breaking news, and she's like, that's right where you know, I live. She immediately calls me, it's like, what's going on?
Wow.
And it was one of those things that... it happened after dark. It was instead of a package bomb, this one seemed to be triggered by a tripwire. And Austin PD was here by the next morning, and I'm not sure exactly when who showed up or whatever, but Austin PD, the FBI, the ATF, the Texas Rangers, just about anybody who was anybody who could help with this. I mean, they had a large presence.
Wow.
And they cordoned off and shut down a fairly sizable chunk of road around the area and stuff so they could properly investigate it. They held the scene for at least 18 hours. It was well into yesterday before they they had us on what they were calling a lockdown, which is, hey, if you're in the house, stay in the house. If you're not here, don't come here, kind of a deal. You know, give them time to investigate, clear for other tripwires, other packages, or other things and stuff, and investigate. Yep.
Be safe, yeah.
And, you know, it was pretty clear that's what was going on Sunday night, so I had already let my work know, hey, I'm just going to come in a little late, let them do what they got to do. When they announced that 10 a.m. Monday morning they were going to have a press conference at the corner of my street and another street, I'm like, yeah, I don't think I'm going to be able to get out at that point. And sure enough, the entire street, you know, right. I live in a gated community, and it's not like a fortified community by any stretch. You could like easily hop through the gate if you wanted to, unfortunately. But the street that comes off of, that became like police central.
So you were totally blocked in there.
If I had had an emergency, I could have gotten out, kind of a deal.
But not an emergency. You can't really hear. You just stayed in the house.
If they need the time and space to investigate, well, at the time was the fourth package explosion or whatever, fourth bombing. There's since been a fifth at a FedEx location down on the outskirts of San Antonio, which seemed to originate about a mile or two from where I'm sitting right now. Down there to a sorting thing, and presumably was coming back up to Austin. It's like, hey, take your time to collect whatever you evidence you need and fix this.
Exactly, catch whoever the heck this is.
I think the people working it, certainly they had boots on the ground. They had, it looked like a coordinated effort. They had buses there in case they had to evacuate people. They had ATVs because there's kind of a grassy, wooded area behind part of the division or whatever. So if the investigation took them there, they were ready. And it was funny because yesterday morning, I'd been getting out of the shower and stuff before I was, you know, totally ready or whatever. My doorbell rings. So I'm like getting some stuff on real quick. I get down there and open the door and there's like nobody there. I'm like, well, that's kind of weird. So I step out and FBI agents had already moved on to two or three other houses. I said, oh, there's a guy over there. And one of them came over. Did you see anything? You know, how about this? How about that? And, you know, I had been in all weekend working on the podcast and stuff, so I didn't have anything for them. But again, they were canvassing the neighborhood and they're taking this threat very seriously, as they should, of course.
Definitely. And we're all glad that you're safe. I was worried when you were telling us it was that close to you. I was like, oh my gosh, couldn't believe it.
Yeah, I was... you know, they, at one point they were saying if you're within a half a mile of this, and I'm sitting there on Google Maps, it's like, how far is half a mile again? And I'm pretty sure I was, you know, maybe on the edge of it or inside of it, but certainly close enough. And once they had decided to use the street I live off of as their staging area, it's like, I'm staying here. They can take as much time as they need.
Definitely.
By the time I left for work this morning, most of it had been cleared away. The little, they'd put, you know, not like a tent, but kind of an awning or whatever for the reporters to be under as they're doing all their camera work and stuff for the on the scene reports. That was there this morning, gone by the time I went home. Probably saw on my way to work, I don't know, cause I drove right by the street that the actual incident had happened on, which is again, just about a block away. Probably at least 8 or 10 porta potties they'd brought in for both the reporters and certainly all the first responders, of which there were a zillion.
Oh, of course, yeah. There's got to be a lot.
So
I'm glad the one in your neighborhood, nobody was hurt though. Correct?
Incorrect. Two people were seriously injured. What it seemed to be was an explosive device along the side of the road, triggered by a tripwire. And it's funny because I was watching the local 24-hour news channel, which is done by Spectrum, Time Warner.
Yeah.
And I respect the work they're putting in. I think they did good coverage. I think they could do better coverage. One of their female anchors, I'm guessing she doesn't watch a lot of primetime drama, because she's like, yeah, it was triggered by a tap wire.
Tap wire?
It's a trip wire. And then later it was a wire tap, and then she finally got it was a trip wire. And I'm like, have you not watched any murder mystery show over the last 20 years? Most of them have covered this.
That's pretty bad. That's pretty bad.
It was funny. And of course, they're on air kind of riffing of, well, what do we got to say? Where are we going to throw? What are we, you know, which clip are we going to show next and stuff like this? So they had a lot on their plate. But it's one of those where I forget if it was the FBI guy. One of them was explaining, you know, before it was a package bomb, so it seemed to be a little more targeted. This was a tripwire. Anyone could have literally tripped against it and set it off, so less targeted. It's definitely changed up how they're investigating it and what they think of the sophistication of the bomb maker and such. It was, you know, I was very much a news junkie yesterday.
Oh, of course. Yeah, I've been watching it, too, on the news. Ever since I heard you were close to me, I've seen it, but I tend to watch, you know, like, let's say, you know, the big national news and everything. But it wasn't being talked about that much until yesterday, this latest bombing. Now it's on all the time.
It went from there have been a couple of package bombs to now they think it's a serial bomber.
Yes.
And it's a question of, is this domestic terrorism or not?
And that's the interesting part, because they don't know. You know, the profile it fits someone who's sophisticated could be ex-military. Who the heck knows who this is? It's terrifying. And it, apparently they have a grudge against Austin. I don't know what it is.
It's unclear what message they're trying to send. And the interim police chief, or police commissioner, I forget which, was very much, we're here to listen. If you've got a message, we're not, you know, we want to talk. We want to prevent further loss of life. Really, the interim guy, I thought, did a very good job when he did the press conferences. He answered the right questions. He was also withholding the right information. Like that, he was giving information like things about the tripwire, because that impacts public safety. You know to look for it. Things about the inner working of the bomb and stuff. I don't need to know that. I don't want to know that. I want them to withhold whatever they need for the sanctity of the investigation.
Exactly.
But apparently, like, nails and stuff are being used as shrapnel, and two kids in their 20s or so, kids being relative, were the ones who tripped up against it. Either they were riding a bike or walking their bike, whatever. They were in the hospital with serious yet non-life-threatening injuries. They seem to be reported as okay now.
Wow.
But not
just
cool.
Going out for a walk in the neighborhood or a bike ride in the neighborhood and boom.
Or that's coming home from practice or whatever they were doing.
Yeah.
But there were a lot of people, because this was at 8:30-ish or so Sunday night, that apparently were not home, could not get home because the whole place had been quartered off, and they held the location, like I said, for well into the next day.
Yeah, and from my understanding, the package that blew up at the FedEx facility was on its way to Austin.
That's my understanding, and it was
one of... I guess it was on a conveyor belt, and it just blew up on the belt, and...
Yeah. It was one of two that were sent from a FedEx location, again, just a mile or two from where I'm sitting right now. So
one
they
of these
recovered
places has to have a camera, you would think. They'd have to have some kind of security camera.
Well, it's interesting because the FedEx does not have an exterior drop-off, so they would have had to come in, so at least somebody should have seen them.
Yeah.
Don't remember, because I've been in that location, I don't remember if they've got cameras or not. Hopefully they do. They identified a second package that they have since tracked down unexploded, so that gives them some much better stuff to work with. But that was one of the questions the FBI had, and were both for me, but also they were asking everybody through the press conference of, if you have security footage in this area, we want it.
Definitely, and especially because they, when they scan that thing in, they scan the exact date and time when that package was dropped off. So if there was any type of security footage there or around there, they should be able to pick up who was in and about that area at that time.
Well, and
which
even,
is good.
Even just in the neighborhood here, they could know what cars were in the area, what people were in the area, that kind of a stuff. It gives them something to go on.
Definitely. Well, I hope they catch them soon, because this is – it's unbelievable. It reminds me almost of – except with bombs – of the DC sniper a while back, where it's just completely random – two guys taking people out, and they couldn't find them. They, you know, what's going on here? And so this is a serial bomber, almost like the Unabomber. Who knows?
Yeah, it is crazy. It really shows that you just need to be kind of aware of your surroundings. You know, if the package shows up on your doorstep and you're not expecting one, particularly if it's not marked or it looks just kind of odd, excess postage or not enough or no return address or no marking, something like that, be safe. Be cautious. I mean, right now, they've been reporting literally hundreds, if not like 1,000 or so a day of suspicious packages. And
wow.
Austin PD's message has been, yes, call us. We will come. And they would rather have hundreds of these kind of, you know, maybe false alarms or whatever, well, definitely false alarms or whatever, rather than risk somebody else getting, you know, blown up or something.
Exactly. Well, you be safe too, John. I know you get a lot of packages.
That's also part of why I've got a UPS store location where my comics go to and whatnot. But it's just, it goes to show this stuff can happen literally anywhere.
Definitely.
It was disconcerting. I did not feel like I was in any sort of imminent danger. It was inconvenient to stay home yesterday, but I was able to do it. Fortunately, I had plenty of food to eat, so didn't starve or anything. But it was both, like I said, disconcerting, but also comforting to know, because if you just do the math, there's one, maybe, I don't know, two or three people who are doing this kind of bombing sort of a thing. Like you said, with the shooter, it was two guys or something.
Exactly.
But then you look at the response, and it is literally orders of magnitude greater. There are hundreds, if not a thousand or more, people actively working on this case in Austin, and it's stretching into San Antonio now, that are looking out for the greater good. That, to me, kind of, you know, shows the you know, are people good or evil? More of them are good than are evil.
Definitely. I agree. I agree wholeheartedly. And we're glad you're safe, and I'm glad everything's okay with you.
Yeah, it was just made for a bizarre way to start the work week.
On a positive note, on the Slack there was posted, and there's a new podcast with Cowabunga Comics. They had their big announcement.
Yeah, they've got a they're moving locations just down the street.
Yeah, and I guess it's going to be triple the size of their current location. And they were going into logistics and talking about a lot of stuff. If any of you guys don't listen, you can listen to the Cowcast. That's Cowabunga Comics podcast. But the nice thing was part of this expansion is because they're really starting to get increased business from us, the mail order people that we use them as our LCS. So they're doing well, and I wish them the best because it's been a big I imagine moving a shop is going to be a big endeavor. Very stressful and a lot of work, a lot of sweat.
Oh, no doubt. It's. I hope it's easier because it's just down the street. So yes. It's not like you've got to load up a truck, drive it a ways, and unload kind of a deal. But it's certainly going to be a lot of work for them to do that. And I'm excited for them because it's. I've seen photos of their current location. It looks awesome. Nice part of the area and such. The fact that it's not far. They'll have a parking lot this time where they didn't before. Plenty of room for the games and other community things they do. I just think it's exciting for them.
Yeah. So you didn't go up there for the world's smallest comic convention, correct?
I did not, and I really didn't know those guys when the last time I went to C2E2, which was within a few hours of their place.
Okay.
And certainly one of the things, if I can work it, the next time I go to C2E2 is to go check out their store.
Oh, okay, cool. Yeah, and I think they're going to be at C2E2 this year, and I told them if they have another small convention up there, I'll fly up and go check it out. So I'd like to see the place where I order my comics.
Yeah, same here. I never did that with DCBS. That was one of the things I did want to do. Certainly now that I've been shopping with Cowabunga for about the last 6 months or so, I definitely want to check their store out. Drew's done it. Had a great time there, so... should be fun. It's just a matter of when can I get myself within that neck of the woods, and looking like it won't be within this calendar year. I've already kind of accounted for my vacation time with some stuff later in the year.
Yeah,
but it's on the list.
Yeah, that's a place I want to go. And they said that they're looking at having a convention this year again. So I'm interested to see if they have another talent like Garth Ennis coming. Who knows? He was my favorite writer. I should have gone for that one, but. I would have liked to met him. But the cool thing is they sent me a book signed by Garth Ennis. I had ordered some of his Battlefield stuff from Dynamite, and they got him to sign it while he was there, really cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I didn't even ask him to. They just did it. You know, those guys go above and beyond.
That's what I love about them is they're passionate fans of comics and wanting it to be just a good experience for everybody who comes in their store or shops through them.
Definitely. Well, I had a bunch of things to go over, but I can save some of it for next time because there's a ton of news and things that have been happening out there. So I don't want to kill you with this thing, but
we can do it. Do those next time, certainly.
Yeah, do them next time. But the one thing I was going to tell you, this one will take a long time to play out, is keep your eyes open. Any of you guys out there with the AT&T Time Warner merger? Right now, it's been blocked. So they're in court right now. So AT&T or Time Warner is saying, hey, this is a political move by the Trump administration because Time Warner owns CNN and Trump hates CNN and, you know, there's some bickering there. They're trying to say, no, people's bills are going to go up on the cable bills and, you know, competition. Anyways, I'm not interested in that. I'm interested in Time Warner owns DC Comics. And so they said if they do not win in court, they're going to split up the company. To sell it off in chunks, and they're going to break it up into, and this is only if the merger is not approved, Warner Brothers Studios, which are the movie studios that we all know, HBO will be a separate thing, and I'm assuming that's HBO, CNN, and then Turner Broadcasting, the TV stuff will be separate. And everyone was looking at going, well, where's DC in that? And they're like, some DC will be up for sale just as a separate purchase.
Really? So I was hearing it might go with Warner Brothers.
That they were looking at that. They're like, we could either package it in, but some studios stepping up may not want to buy DC. Or I would think it would be crazy because they have the movie rights and that's could be a big seller. But they were looking at possibly even spinning off just DC as a separate sale. So I'm just interested to see what happens, but it's going to take a while for this to play out in the courts. So keep your eyes open.
It is going to be interesting and stuff. And certainly DC's got a crazy big library just as they are. But the other thing this could impact is not only how relations go with Warner Brothers on TV and because that's how part of the CW is and movie rights and stuff, but also what's going to happen with like the Hanna-Barbera characters. Do they go with DC? Do they not? There's a lot of ways this could kind of fragment
exactly, because someone could step in and say, I want to buy this piece, I want to buy this piece. And it, you know, Warner Brothers itself, or I mean, Time Warner, I guess I should say, you know, they, you know, they're a big mega corporation, billions and $50 billion in revenue. They're not concerned about DC Comics. They're concerned about the movies. They're concerned about certain things. Hanna-Barbera, I wouldn't be surprised if some of the executives didn't even know they owned it. So it'll be interesting to see how this all plays out. So it, not only this, but on the small scale, you heard about Mark Millar sold to Netflix, correct?
Yeah.
And did you hear about, what's his name? Extreme Studios. I'm trying to think of the guy's name
now. Rob Liefeld, I think, did too.
He sold to Netflix too. Netflix is seeing these comic book movies and they are in desperate need of original content. And they're going through and they're buying up all these image creators, their properties.
That would be fascinating, is if Netflix said that they'd bid on DC. That would be a game changer.
That's what I'm thinking, because I started research on this. I went through and I was like, I read an article on this on Netflix after they were buying this and why they're buying all this content. They're saying, okay, a typical studio, a movie studio, makes between 20 to 50 hours of content per year. They make over 1,000 hours of content every year. They're making 80 original films in 2018. Mm-hmm. That's just films. And that's not including TV series that are coming out. So they're just magnitudes of the content that's coming out versus a studio. So they have to keep people there because, you know, that Hulu was created. And so people stopped selling some of their good stuff to them. So they're coming up with their own original stuff. And this year, or they said in 2017, that was the latest one I could find. They said they planned on spending $15 billion in content. And so they're going around and they're looking at like Rob Liefeld. They gave him a seven-figure for his company, seven figures, which is anywhere from $1 million to $9 million. That's just a drop in the bucket of what they're willing to pay. Mark Millar, I don't know what he's coming out with the new comic. Can't remember on the latest solicits, but it's going to have a Netflix logo. And Netflix says we need access to publishing. They said that in things. So I'm interested to see if Netflix is interested in purchasing a Warner Studios or purchasing a DC, or just if they're just going to buy up Image, because Image has all these creators who are...
Well, but the thing is, they can't really buy Image because Image owns nothing but the Image Eye.
Correct, correct. Just the individual creators. Like, if I'm... let's pick on somebody here. So if I'm Todd McFarlane, I'm the Spawn creator, and I'm 50-some-odd years old. He's 55, let's say, at 56, somewhere around there. They got to have an end in sight, you know, because he's a corporation. And he wants to retire one day or maybe just do this as a hobby. But day in, day out, Mark Millar probably said, this is a lot of work and working with this studio and that studio and this studio and that studio. I can package and sell the whole thing and just do what I do, which is create stuff and make a lot of money doing it. I wonder if they're looking at doing that as like an end game. Hey, here's my picture out. I'll just sign over all my characters at Netflix and they'll give me $9 million. There's my retirement fund.
I mean, I get where you're going from, and certainly for some creators, that's not a bad route. From the Netflix side of it, do you want to spend your time and money negotiating with a plethora of people, or if DC were to come available, do you want to focus your efforts there for the cost of one bigger purchase, get this huge library of, you know, very world-famous characters?
Correct. And I really think they're interested in this comic book stuff because I bet you Marvel's done well for them. They know those numbers, we don't, but I guarantee you they've done well.
Not only that, but look at the nature of comic fans. We are repeat business.
Exactly. We're repeat business. We're used to serialized stuff, and they're basically selling us a trade paperback worth of material.
Yeah.
Here's 10 episodes. Here you go. And we consume it. So I'm just so interested to see how all this plays out with like the small things with Warner Brothers with Time Warner, and just see how that all plays out over the coming months and years.
No, definitely. It'll be interesting. We had the teleconference this past Saturday. It started at 7 p.m., actually went for about 4 hours, 4 hours, 15 minutes or something. Let's see, you were there, Jason was there, Dom was there, Brandon was there, Randy, Sam, people were there at different times and whatnot. We talked everything from barcode scanners for comic software to conventions, including Emerald City, MegaCon, Fan Expo Dallas, the Daytona Comic-Con, the Great Lakes Comic-Con, the Phoenix Comic-Con. We talked about late comics. We talked about Aftershock comics. We talked about mail order comics, both DC and Cowabunga. Various creators, including like Tom Zoller, who's done Time and Vine, Loving Capes, Long Distance. We talked, of course, the Justice League movie, because I had just seen it the night before, finally, on Blu-ray. That episode should be up before this episode goes up. We talked about Hawkman and the woes of his continuity. The DC CW universe, Walking Dead, and just how there's too much in the way of comics, TV, and movies to consume these days. And yes, I actually took some notes this time so I would remember all of that.
You are good. I was there for the first 2 hours, and I'll tell you what, that was my first time going on to the teleconference, and I had a lot of fun. Believe it or not, I thought, oh, this is going to be weird, but I did it, and I loved it, and I'm going back for the next one. And just so you guys know, if none of you have done that, feel free, get your feet wet, because everyone is so nice. They listen to everything you say. They're not judgmental. People are congratulating me for getting into DC versus why haven't you been reading it, you idiot. And I was there for 2 hours. I couldn't be there because I'm on the East Coast, and my wife's like at 10 o'clock. She's like, hey, let's do something else besides you sitting there talking on the teleconference. But after 2 hours, I left, and they kept going for 2 hours more. So you can go as early, as late as you want, and it goes until it goes. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah, it was a really good discussion, covered a lot of ground. I always enjoy them. There's just you never know what the topic's going to be or where it goes, but it's fun. Let's see. I want to remind people we do have the promo code of Comic Book Page, all one word, over at Stitcher Premium. That gets you a month-long trial subscription, and if you actually decide to sign up for it, I get a one-time $5 fee, so yay! But the reason we've got that is they've got that Wolverine The Long Night 10-episode scripted series. They're kind of calling it Marvel's first serious foray into podcasting. It's more radio drama, but, you know, whatever. But instead of getting just the week-long trial, you get the month-long extended free trial, so the promo code's worth using on that grounds alone. I haven't had time to check it out, but hopefully somebody will check it out and report back as to did they like it, did they not, what'd they think of it. And then the preview spotlight deadline is going to be Saturday morning, April 7th. That's as early as I get up and get working on it. Again, post on the forum what you're going to do. We try not to have many duplicates. We had just a great turnout this past time. It's about a 2-hour, 15-minute episode, so a lot of great stuff. Solicits are out now as we record this. They should all be available kind of online by the time this episode goes up. And then a few days after this goes up, if I've got this right, on the 28th is when previews actually comes out. And then on April 14th at 7 p.m. Central Time is when we're doing the next Comic Book Page teleconference, like we just talked about. You don't have to be there right when it starts at 7 p.m. It goes until it's done. Come and stuff at any time. Just text me on Skype saying, hey, I'm here and I'd like in. I'll add you to the call and you can join the conversation if it's already in progress. Or you can just talk to me because we start the call that way. It's a lot of fun.
I enjoyed it. So I recommend all of you guys get involved. And I may try to listen to that Wolverine podcast or whatever they call it, just to let you know how it was.
I'm curious. It's just I got enough on my plate right now. I don't know if I'll have time to check it out.
I know. There's a lot of stuff.
I'm also curious how long the episodes are and how much of a time commitment it is for the full thing.
Yeah, if you go on there and it's 30 minutes, it's not a big deal. But if you go on there, it's an hour and a half that's a big commitment.
Yeah. So we'll see. So anything else? Does that pretty much do it?
That pretty much does it.
Cool. Join us next time as we discuss Aquaman number 34 from DC, Mighty Thor number 705 from Marvel, and Comic Book History of Comics, Comics for All number 4 from Image Comics.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.